You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. You hit the WWBC on the World Wide Web. It comes up and you hit Listen Live. Correct, Allie?
That's right.
That's how you do it, right?
Yes.
You're taking Ellen's spot, and you know.
I don't know all that whole list of stuff like she does. She railed it off for 15 years.
So for our listeners who are tuning in today, Ellen O'Neill is off today. Allie is filling the spot in for her.
And a little bit.
Allie Tambor. And that's why I said the pod for online. Yeah. We have an action-packed show today. As you know, we sit here on Mondays from 1 to 2, and we talk about kitchen table topics. Things right here in Brevard County, Florida, around the nation, around the world, and we give people a platform on our show of fear. We do have a fear and balance show to talk about whatever they want to talk about, whether it's writing a book, whether it's learning how to write a book, maybe it's taking a personal experience and writing an autobiography to help someone. Some people come on to talk about how to save money, some want to spend money, some want to make money, financial literacy. Whatever it is, even the environment. We just had the people from Thousand Island
Fest. That's right, yes.
We learned a lot about the Indian River Lagoon and the health of the lagoon and the tourism effect. We learned so much on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And so it's no different. Our friend, one of my good friends is here. Her name is Cindy Alex Foley. She is an author and she's the president of the Brevard Authors Society.
Hello.
Welcome to our show.
Glad to be here today. Thanks for inviting me.
And Cindy's going to be on the second segment with retired Major General of the Army, Mr. Greg Martin. Mr. Martin is going to talk a little bit later about his book about bipolar disorder. And Cindy is going to talk to us about her books as well and her role with the Brevard Authors Society. Now, our first segment, we are going to be joined on the radio by a gentleman, Ronnie West. He is a mental health professional, and he's going to speak with us about good parenting in today's world. Now, Cindy, you and I and Allie were chatting just before the show about good parenting, and we actually had an entire show just before we got on air, Allie.
Yes, we did, yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing we've got people like us around to help you double-check yourself and your parenting and what else can I do and what makes... But, you know, presents itself as a good thing versus could hurt, you know.
Right. So and Cindy, we said that faith does play a part.
Definitely,
a part.
Definitely. Without that, handicap.
That's right. You got to have it. It's there. It's there for a reason, right?
Yep.
There's a creator. There's someone that we're responsible to and sits on our shoulders. Like I like to say, my Lord Krishna, because I am Hindu.
Yes.
I say he's in my front seat of my car every single day. And people might think I have a mental disorder, but I actually talk to him sometimes.
Well,
I feel good when I talk, and I say,
"Yeah,
because he talks to us as well."
You do it for a living. It should feel quite comfortable.
He lives in my heart.
There you
go. And as long as you're alive and your heart is beating, there is a higher power right there helping you to breathe and talk and walk and make wise decisions. And so, you know, I always look for great guests for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And I found a gentleman. His name is Dr. Jeremy Dale, and him and another friend of his has this show, and they do some podcasts on YouTube and things like that, and they speak about good parenting and good skills. And I invited him to call in on our show. He has an MA, and he's calling in, I most believe, from Dallas. I'm not sure. Let's find out.
Okay.
So, Mr. Ronnie West, you're on the phone. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And where are you calling in from?
Yeah, North Dallas area in Texas.
Oh, see, I did my homework. I figured it out.
Good job.
You did.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so we, you know, on our show, we give everybody a platform, and it is a very unscripted, it's a very informational show. We give out valuable information to our listeners, whether they want to speak to someone about something, maybe they walk away with saying, hey, I was listening to my friends, and I learned something today. And when I looked at your website and all the great things that you and Mr. Jeremy are doing, I felt like you would be a really good fit for us today. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you started Good Parenting, Good Children.
Sure. Excellent. Yes. So my name is Ronnie West. I am a licensed professional counselor in Texas. I have a master's degree in counseling, and I've been married for, it'll be 20 years this June. My wife and I have 7 children. We have 5 daughters and 2 sons that range from 15 to 3. And I think it was during the pandemic in 2020, my friend Jeremy, who I've known since we went to college, around 2002, I think we met, I'd known since then, he called and said he wanted to work on maybe doing a parenting book. And I told him that maybe we should try a podcast or a YouTube series first. And so we started planning, and at that time, I didn't want him to tell me what his philosophy would be. I said, wait, let me think about it. I want to tell you like what I come up with that I would want to do, and then see if it matches with what you've already been thinking. And I forget how I put it, but it was something similar to what we've ended up with. And what we ended up with was the goal of parenting is to help raise children that will become virtuous and competent young adults.
There you go.
So I sort of presented that to him. I wanted to talk about virtue, and I wanted to talk about how we want to be virtuous parents, we want our kids to be virtuous, and then that we create a trajectory where we give them every chance to become virtuous and competent at when they're going into young adulthood. And he agreed. He was like, that is really similar to the sorts of things I was thinking about, and then that became the basis for our show, basically.
Yeah, and you guys have been doing this for quite a while. You have quite a wide audience, too. Because, you know, in today's world, everyone says, oh, the foundation for everything starts at home. It starts with the family. But oftentimes, I remembered my dad would say to us, a child will not listen to your words. They will follow your actions.
Yep.
And he would say, you might want them to do something, and you will tell them to do it, but they will follow your example. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, when you say the word virtuous, are you saying then that it's faith-based as well?
So our goal, we are both Christians, so that's our worldview and where we come from. Our goal at the beginning was to not to create like a Christian parenting series, because we didn't want to limit it in that way. And we also wanted to be talking about it in a way that was universally helpful. And so that's part of the reasoning behind thinking about it from the term of, you know, virtuous and competent instead of something more overtly Christian. But that definitely informs our worldview and how we go about it, because that may impact sort of how we talk about what is a virtue and what are, you know, what virtues are and how morality comes into play. And of course, something that's important to him and I both is that our kids, you know, grow into people that love God and want to follow God, and so so that definitely impacts how we go about it. But
yeah.
I think part of our philosophy, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is you don't want to alienate other cultures and other people from listening to your podcast or what you have
right.
to say, because the world, as you know, is a global village, right? And it takes a village to raise all our children. And I come from a background where I went to public Christian schools until I was 18 years old. So I learned about the Bible until I was 18. said the Lord's Prayer every day, and then I practiced Hinduism at home, and then I had Muslim sisters and brothers from my mother's first husband. So the thing is, we had an overall love for all religions and all cultures, because we saw that people talked about it differently. But what it was is everybody wanted to be a good parent. Everybody wanted their children to grow up and know God. And everybody wanted a kid to become something. So I hear what you're saying, and yes, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think the virtues that we would talk about, I don't think there would be disagreement between those different worldviews. And I think there'd be broad agreement about what is virtuous, because we're talking about things like being humble and being loving, being a diligent, hard worker, being respectful of other people.
Honest.
Being honest, having hope. You know, when we started thinking about virtue and how this impacted things, the Bible talks about hope, but I'd always kind of struggled to figure out how is hope a virtue. And my current theory is hope is the belief that things can get better and that you can impact that. And so without hope, you're not going to be able to make things better, because you won't get motivated to do anything. If you're hopeless, you're not going to make changes. You're not going to work hard, because nothing can improve. And so hope is the thing that motivates and gives you permission to do better. And so I went from not understanding how I think hope could be a virtue to thinking it's one of the most fundamental and important virtues for self-improvement and doing better. And that's very true for parents. Parents need to have hope that they can have a positive impact on their kids and make their kids' lives better than they would be otherwise. Right.
And, you know, parenting is way harder than we think. You know, people think, you know, you're going to have a kid and then you're going to have this white, nice house with a white picket fence. And, you know, they're going to sit down and eat and be respectful and clear the table. But it's not. So what are some of the advice that you give young parents, besides waking up to feed every 2 hours and change diapers? How do you start? Because, you know, parenting, if you start the children with their faith and to know God from little, they grow up respecting someone, having, like you said, the hope in hard time. When hardships and challenges come, you have that person to talk to. And of course, my daughter is Christian, her husband is Catholic, so my granddaughter, her best friend is Jesus, and so she will tell everybody. And I'll have to send you her Instagram. She has an Instagram that calls Christ Save Souls, and she just had hundreds of views, thousands actually of views on some of her messages from the Bible. And so I feel like what you're saying is you give people hope, but they also have a friend that they can talk to when they need it. And you start that very young, is what you're saying.
Yes. So you should have, when your child thinks about the relationship with you or the way that they feel about the relationship, they should know that you're going to always be honest and straightforward with them, that when you say something is going to be a certain way, that they can trust that, and that you don't make promises you can't keep, and that you're going to do what is in their best interest for their safety and for living a good, both good as in, you know, moral and virtuous, but also good as in hopefully fun and safe life. And I think that if you create that environment, they'll be able to talk to you in a way that is like a friend and also like a mentor and a mentee and like a parent and a child. Like you get some of all of that. I mean, primarily you're a parent first and there is a respectful relationship there, but hopefully you have an open and pleasant and fun enough relationship that you've got, they can get some of what they would get from a friend from you from time to time and a mentor and a mentee as well.
Now, what do you think accounts for the divorce rate in not just the United States, but around the world? A lot of us older people, I mean, I'm 60 years old and I've been married 34 years, but, you know, there's highs and lows. Thank you. There's ups and downs, but you know, you have to communicate, you have to be able to give each other space, you have to be able to know your mate and have a solid foundation for your children. But I noticed that there's so many people that cut and run, and they become selfish.
Yeah.
What can you say to those people who are going through issues and they should sit down and say, look, the most important thing are our children. And why am I cutting and running because I want to be hanging around with my friends in a bar or things like that? What happens to people from that day that they take these beautiful vows and then all of a sudden, boom, there's a divorce?
So I think you can tackle this question on the front end when you're choosing your mate, and I think that that's a worthwhile way of looking at it. And then you can tackle it on the back end once that's done and you're already married. And so as far as when you know you're married and now you want to try to make it work, I think focusing more on your responsibilities can help. Now, there's issues when you're married to somebody and they're abusive and they're breaking laws, they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, and you know that sort of thing. So assuming it's more, it's not a safety issue like that, and it's more maturity, generic selfishness, or what you know what sometimes is called irreconcilable differences, right? I think focusing on our responsibilities and what we should be doing with our life can help to some degree. So I've heard people say something like this, not exactly this statement, but something very similar, of if you pursue happiness, then there's a good chance you will not be virtuous or happy. But if you pursue virtue, then there's a good chance you will become more virtuous, and that will lead to inner peace, joy, and happiness.
Yes.
And so I think pursuing that can be very helpful. My grandfather was actually a preacher and a psychologist, and my dad and my uncle were also preachers and psychologists. And my grandfather did a series on marriage. When he told this story, he did a lot of marital therapy, and he told a story about a couple that he did marital therapy with where the wife was getting very frustrated with her husband. And she really disliked him and hated him. And I think at one point she asked my grandfather something like, and maybe this was in jest, but like, you know, how could I hurt him because he's hurting me so much? And what should I do? And my grandfather tells her, be as nice as you possibly can. Take care of him. Do the things he wants you to do. Be really, really sweet to him. And after a few weeks of that, and he's having such a good time, and he's enjoying you so much, then leave, right? So she starts to do it, and then my grandfather asks her about it later, and she says, oh, he's acting so nice and sweet, I don't want to go anymore, right? Yeah. Now, that's overly simplistic, and that's not always going to work at all. But it does show a point. If you pursue your responsibility and you pursue virtue, sometimes that leads to some of the good things you're wanting. But if you just pursue the good things without pursuing virtue, you know, it's likely to not work, I think.
Well, for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Ronnie West, and he holds an MA from Dallas Baptist University. He's been a counselor since 2011. Wow. Married since 2004 and father since 2009. His wife, Heather, is a stay-at-home mom who homeschools all 7 of their kids. Congratulations, 7 kids. My parents had 18.
Hot dog. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So do you find, Mr. West, as you get older, that you're channeling some of the energy that your parents and grandparents had? Because I find myself going back into cultural things. Like, my father used to say this. My mother used to say this. Things that I would say, oh, they were so old-fashioned and blah. And I'm like, oh, they made a lot of sense. Do you find as we get older that we do become our grandparents and we can hear their voices echoing in our head about parenting, about spirituality, about things in life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that especially if they were sort of a loud voice, if they were really impactful, I think that for folks that had bad situations that were arguably more abusive, then that happens in a negative way. But then for those of us that hopefully had wise and loving and virtuous grandparents and parents that were very impactful, we hear that from them as well. And I think that the way we should respond to that is pay careful attention. Don't discredit things because they're not popular in culture right now. Just because things aren't popular right now doesn't mean they're not very, very good and valuable. but we also need to look at those things and see if there's anything that we need to change. I look at how my grandparents dealt with things and how my parents dealt with things, and overall, I think it was pretty good. And so I want to take advantage of the good examples. And then there's some things that I want to adjust for my kids to try and hopefully make them a little bit better. And if we take that process seriously, where we take what's good and we repent or we improve on what's not so great, then hopefully we can do something that is a little bit even better than what, you know, our parents and grandparents did for us.
Right. And you know, it's hard to tell young people that when you have children that you are going to worry for the rest of your life if you don't have a good foundation, right? Because a lot of people, they have children, but they don't want them. You know, God sends every child for a reason, right? We all know that, and we do know about people that have to have family planning and be very responsible with their reproductive system and all that. But how do you talk to the young people during counseling before marriage about having children and what it entails to have children, and the hard work and sacrifice that you have to have a child? Because it's no picnic when you have children. You start losing some friends, because some friends want you to come and hang out, but now you have to take care of your family. You know, you give up a lot when you want to be a good parent and have a solid foundation. So how do you counsel the young people when they come to you about marriage and children and leaving a good footprint behind on this earth with the families they're going to have?
Yeah, not to sound like a broken record, but I think so several of the questions you've asked have similar themes in my mind, and it has to do with taking responsibility and your outlook. You know, a couple of my favorite therapies are cognitive behavioral therapy, because it talks about how what we tell ourselves and what we, you know, our habitual thoughts and the thoughts that pop, we allow to pop into our head sort of automatically and habitually, and the things we tell ourselves, how much that impacts our mood and our emotions, but also our outlook. And I think that's very true and wise, and so I like that therapy. And the narrative therapy, I'm not as well versed in, but when I've read about it, I've been very pleased with what it has to say about how the narratives in our life impact how we look at things. So as far as how difficult it is to raise children and also the sacrifices you're going to have to make and what's going on, we need to frame those things in a way that is accurate but also hopeful. I think hope is accurate, and we don't want to be pessimistic or exaggerate the difficulties. When we have kids, things are going to be different. But having children and raising them and all of the wonderful parts of that, to me, it represents some of the best things I've done with my life and some of the most enjoyable things I've done with my life. And I look forward to seeing my kids as they get older and, Lord willing, hopefully someday having grandkids. And so the little things are worth it. But the other thing, when we started having kids, a lot of our friends, they stopped going out and having fun because they were like, it's too hard to put the kids down for bed at a friend's house and they need to be in bed by 7:30 or 8 or whatever it is. What my wife and I did is that we said, no, we're not going to stop having fun. We're going to have fun. So we trained our kids to be able to go to bed very successfully at 7:45 or 8 at our house, and then we trained them to go to bed at other people's houses. And it involved, you know,
you must be Indian or Persian, because that's what we do. You know, we would have,
is that what you do?
Yeah, at one time we would have, you know, because my husband is an ER physician, he's now retired, but he didn't like going to restaurants and things, but we liked entertaining at home, and so did other Persian families and Indian families. And so they would say, come over, we're having a dinner, bring the kids. And we would sit there, and the men play cards, and the ladies talk and eat, and then we all clean up. And there'd be 40, 50, 60 people, and then there'll be 5 or 6 kids asleep on the couch or the bed. And then we wake them up, bring them home. But the thing is, everybody wanted to be with their kids. And what I learned from those parties was that you are with well-liked-minded people. People were talking about how to get their kids into college. People were talking about MCAT scores, LSAT scores. you know, which university?
Doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, the Indian people with the lawyer, doctor, engineer open a business thing.
Yeah.
But what I learned from that was once you have children, you want them to be around people who are going to uplift their lives and give great information in their minds. And so you have to be careful who they're around. And that brings me to my next question. We were reading so much about sleepovers, and a lot of parents, self included, we did not like sleepovers unless we know the people 100%.
Or that you were all there at the same time.
Right, because you know, when your kid leaves your area, they leave your home, and they go to someone else's home, you don't know what that family is doing, who's living there, what kind of ideas are going to be in your kid's head. How do you feel about children going over and sleeping at other people's houses if you don't know them, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a question. If you want to be a good parent, all these things come up into your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to answer that. And I want to say something really quickly about what we just said about the Persian families and then us having kids go to bed. This is part of what we tell ourselves and how we limit ourselves as parents and as humans. Parents will say, it's too hard for me to put my kid to bed at somebody else's house. But you just described 20 couples doing it with their kids, and we've done it. And so if we limit what we're able to do, we make parenting harder than it has to be. And I think that is one of the pieces of advice I would give to new parents. Don't make it harder than it has to be. There's sacrifices you think you have to make, you don't have to make, and you don't have to make it so hard on yourself. So I just wanted to say that.
Yes.
Now, as far as the sleepovers go, I think that we need to vet the parents that we would be sending our kids over to. But the other thing that we do is, I think my wife and I are very, very open very quickly with most anybody we speak to. That's just part of our personality. And people get to know our kids, and our kids are very open. So I think people, by and large, feel comfortable having their kids come to our house for a sleepover. And so mostly we host the sleepovers ourselves. And a lot of times kids like coming to our house because there's lots of kids. So there's lots of action, and that makes it so it's a lot of fun. And so one way we deal with that is we tend to host, and we kind of know what's going on better. And so that's one way. The other way is we don't do sleepovers unless it's with people that we know pretty well. And then I think the third piece of that is I talk to my kids very openly about the kinds of things I would be concerned about, and they seem to be very comfortable telling me if something feels wrong or seems off. So if they're with a friend and the friend is saying, you know, talking about things in a way that seems to be not good, they'll let me know that something seems off. And
you have to be receptive to listen, too, because I know, like, even with my husband and I, when our kids would come home and tell us things, we had our set of morals and values at home that we tried to tell them. And it wasn't, you know, that you're being, you know, like my daughter would say sometimes, boy, you guys are so old-fashioned. But we had to be, because we had to protect them from so many things out there. But, you know, my mom used to tell us when we were growing up, if you make your bed, you're going to have to lie on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I would tell my kids and interpret that to them and say, listen, if you have sex outside of marriage and you get pregnant for someone, your life, you know, it's going to be tough. And we will tell our sons, don't fool around with people's daughters until you have a four-year degree, or you're a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer, because you're going to have to pay child support. And they'll be like, these people are weird, you know. But when you think, you know,
that stuff sticks. That stuff sticks. Sticks in their head.
Yeah,
you know, when you talk and you're serious.
Well, you don't want them to have experiences and challenges in life that they shouldn't have. So you teach them, you know. So
well, you weren't sugarcoating it. You were being frank.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you have to. So you know, you homeschool your children, and we have like a minute left, and I wanted to ask you. We've had so many people on a show that homeschool their kids, and we are seeing so many people that are saying, listen, I want my kids to have a good quality education, but I don't want certain things shoved down my children's throats. Age-appropriate things in school. Some books are being banned, and rightfully so, some should, and others shouldn't, but that's another show at another time. But at the same time, parents are choosing to homeschool. Can you tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends, what are the three top things in your mind about homeschooling the children and why you guys do it?
Three main reasons. Okay. So we wanted to instill values that matched our values. And so that involves being able to have some religion as part of our education, but just other things as well. Just, we wanted to instill our values. Another piece of it is, I think a lot, you have to choose where you live based on the school system, which I think is a flaw in the way the American school system is set up, that you have to be in the right zip code or the right school district. We don't have to worry about that. I think our area has good schools, but that didn't even factor our decision. We lived where we wanted to live, and we were able to make sure that our kids are getting a good education. And I remember when I was a kid, it seemed like the public school system in California taught kids to hate math, not on purpose, but it was one of the consequences. And I want to try to help my kids love math and love the subjects that are going to help them be successful. And so...
So you have skin in the game, basically. You have good skin in the game.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely correct. You know, we all live in zip... Everything is by zip codes. But if we were collectively as a nation to put resources in all zip codes, all children will have a quality education,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then parents...
And one more. I've got a fourth. It's okay. When you homeschool, you have a significant amount of influence over a child's pool of friends, their pool of mentors, their pool of potential people they have crushes on or romantic partners or whatever. You get to have a major impact on the pool they select from. You don't choose for them, but you can choose the pool they select from. And if they're in public school, you have no, very, very, very little influence on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's nice. That's very helpful.
Yeah. Well, it's important if people have children for them to listen to somebody like yourself, Mr. West, and you know, good parents and having good children, it doesn't fall from the sky, right? It's hard work and it's sacrifice. And yes, it could be old fashioned, like my kids used to tell us as well. I remember that my husband many times would say to the kids before he went to the hospital, tell me what you want to eat tomorrow. And we'll have four children staying over at our home. And it always bothered me sometimes that some parents would bring their kids, because we were like you, we hosted the kids and they were from all great families. But sometimes the parents wouldn't even come to the door to say hello. Mm. And I, for me, it was mind-boggling. Like, you don't come to say hello to see who your child is staying with.
Yeah.
And these are people who were lawyers, doctors, whatever. But I learned something. They trusted us.
Yeah.
And they respected us. And they sent their precious children to our homes. And I made sure that they had, you know, dinner and lunch the next day. And we instilled values. And some of those kids up to today will still say, my favorite food is curry chicken, you know, because that's what we've had, you know. So we were doing our little bit of diplomacy without knowing it. We had the UN at our
there
house on the sleepovers. But give us your website, Dr. West. I mean, Mr. I forgot Dr.
Mr. West.
Yeah, because
that's all right.
Dr. Jeremy Dale is not here. He's in the Air Force, you said, right? He was called away.
Yes.
So give us the website for you and Dr. Dale so that people could go on and look at your blogs and learn some more about good parenting and maybe apply it to their own lives or share it with their grandchildren and their friends.
Excellent. It's goodparentsgoodchildren.com, and it's all one word. And you can look us up on, you know, YouTube or podcasting sites, and you can find some of our shows, Good Parents, Good Children, no spaces.
Thank you very much for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Steve and Friends, and to our listening audience. We'll be right back with Cindy Foley, and we'll talk a little bit about authors, and we'll be right back.
Thanks.
And Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9.com. That's cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet online. All you have to do is hit WWBC and hit Listen Live. So our first segment was really wonderful. We had a great guest that took the time to call in, Mr. Ronnie West, a mental health professional, and he spoke to us about good parenting and good families and everything. It was wonderful. We learned something.
It was
something.
Really great. It was exciting.
Mm-hmm. And our second segment is with Mr. Greg Martin. He's a retired Major General of the Army. Wow. Thank you for your service, sir. And my friend, Cindy Alex Foley, she's an author and she's the president of the Brevard Authors Society. Thank you for taking the time to be here, Cindy.
Glad to be here.
So wonderful to have you on board. So talk to us, bring us up to speed about what you've been doing since the last time you came on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yes. Well, so I've written several books since the last time I came on. I think the first time I was here was my first book, and I'm currently working on my 11th. But I'm not really here to talk about that as much as I am the Brevard Author Society, and to welcome our guest, Greg Martin. The Brevard Authors Society has been around for 10 years, and thanks to our founder, Greg Blachowicz. Thanks, Greg. pardon me, I said Greg, but his name is Gene.
Yeah.
Okay. So, getting that straight.
Well, I did that earlier, too. I mixed up the doctor with Dave M.A.
Yeah, with my guest. Okay. But we're here to help authors to reach their dreams. So, possibly through seminars or through critique groups or opportunities at local libraries to talk about what they write or their platform. And that's how I met Greg. I was given his contact information through one of the local libraries where he reached out with his mission, which is to bring awareness to mental health and to help stop the stigma against mental health.
Yeah, and there is a stigma. There really is. So many people sweep it under the rug. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to tell their families because they're afraid of repercussions, right?
Right.
So, and on the phone we have our Mr. Greg. So, Mr. Greg, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, firstly, it's great to be on with you. Thank you very much. I was unknowingly born with a bipolar brain, and I lived most of my life, actually all of my life, on the bipolar spectrum. And the characteristics of bipolar disorder give a person extra energy, drive, enthusiasm, problem-solving skills, creativity, and the like. And it benefited me enormously all through junior high, high school, West Point, through the Army, until my genetic predisposition was triggered in the Iraq War, and then I had the onset of real bipolar disorder, which continued to help me in my 40s and 50s until it went too high, and then it basically set me rocketing off into, you know, the incredible level of full-blown mania, which then brought me crashing down to where I was fired from my job as a two-star, forced to retire, and then later hospitalized. And so for the last 8 years, I've been on a road to recovery, and I'm actually living a happy, healthy, purposeful life now. And my mission in life is sharing my bipolar story to help stop the stigma, promote recovery, and save lives.
Well, your story certainly is one of hope and love and compassion, and you have such knowledge and experience with bipolar disorder, but faith played a big part of your life in this as well. So tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about how faith helped you with this.
Well, faith has always been a bedrock principle, a pillar of my life. Faith, it really made me a better person, a better Army officer. It gave me hope and inspiration when I was hopeless and thought I was never going to get better. So, I mean, belief in God and its spiritual strength really helped lift me up out of what I call bipolar hell, which was hopeless, crippling depression and terrifying psychosis and really wanting to die. So my faith in God and, you know, God himself really helped lift me up and helped me get on the road to recovery.
Yeah, and our guest before talked about hope, Cindy, you heard him. Mm-hmm. So when you met Mr. Martin, our retired Major General, what did you think about the story?
Well,
because did you know so much about the mental illness and the stigmas and the signs and symptoms of bipolar and all that?
I knew a little bit about it because my very dear friend, who since has passed, was living in St. Cloud, and she had shared her story with me, and she had bipolar disorder from the time she was 9, and then she did receive some help with it later on in her life, but when she was 9, that was in the 1950s, and nobody knew about it then. So everything was experimental, and nothing worked for her for a long time. For 35 years, she suffered. So I know more about it only because of the story that she told me, which I told in my first book, The Truth Lies. Where is perception versus reality, which one wins? And I think when you're stuck in that mental displacement, you don't really know what the truth is.
Yes, and so Mr. Greg, your story, you're trying to educate people and stop the stigma, promote recovery, and tell us your journey. But for our listening audience who have tuned in today, what were some of the signs and symptoms of your bipolar disorder?
Well, the signs and symptoms are excessive energy, continuous rapid speaking, a sense of grandiosity, you know, believing oneself to be up there with God in their capabilities, believing that I was the smartest person in the world, a sense of what they call religiosity, which is extreme religious activity, to where I was doing, you know, upwards of 30 significant religious events per week across 4 different churches, not needing sleep, interrupting people continuously, having a level of enthusiasm that's just way, way over the top, and having ideas just flowing, new ideas flowing out of my mind constantly. Those are some of the symptoms that I had.
Yeah, Ali, do you know anyone that had bipolar disorder?
I was just trying to think back through the people that probably wasn't diagnosed, but I remember it being in school with some kids who were, you know, doing so much as, well, I got to leave right now because we're going to go here and we're going to do that, and we're going to go over there and we're going to see, you know, and I'm thinking, slow down, stop, have dinner with your family. You know, it felt like it was too much to me, just sticking to them, and I never knew that that's what that would be called.
And in the lay terms, they would say the mad people. Mm-hmm. Right, people would just attach a label to folks.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Gregg, so talk to us about what happened in the Army. I mean, did you find that there was enough help for people with this type of mental health disorder?
Well, absolutely not when I was in, although the military is improving significantly on its training, education, availability of resources, normalizing the conversation about mental health and accommodating people with mental disabilities or mental conditions.
That's good.
But in my case, you know, my living on the bipolar spectrum, it helped me enormously for years and decades by giving me, I had a condition called hyperthymia, which is a continuous low-level mania, which gave me extra energy, drive, enthusiasm, and so forth. So it boosted and elevated my performance until it went too high, and that wasn't until I was in my, you know, late 40s and 50s, and then ultimately it brought me crashing down. And when it did, you know, I actually went and got evaluated, you know, numerous times, and 6 straight times the doctors told me, you're fine, there's nothing wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with your health at all. And but they were wrong. I mean, they just plain got it wrong, because bipolar disorder is challenging and difficult to diagnose properly. And then finally, on the 7th try, they diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, and it was the right diagnosis. And I thanked the doctor. I said, hey, thank you, because I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. And now I have a target and a face on the target, and I can own this and start to get better.
Yeah, and even though your story is deeply inspirational, it's also terrifying.
Yes.
To know that your mind was in such turmoil, and you probably didn't know who to turn to and what to do at that point, because it was affecting your life to a point where you said at some points you thought you had dismal thoughts.
I'd like to just add to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Gregg. Certainly, I'm not in his mind, and I don't know what he felt. But I have to say that his book radically displays what some of that feeling and emotion and that chaos must have been, so much to the point that there were times I had to put the book down and go outside and take a breath.
Yeah, because suicidal thoughts, too. Because you don't know what's happening to your beautiful mind, body, spirit, and soul. So, Mr. Gregg, talk to us a little bit about that, because there were times when you were in such deep despair that you did become suicidal as well.
Yeah, you use the right word. I mean, bipolar disorder is terrifying. It is terrifying because it's a complex illness or disease of the brain, where the brain takes off and does what it wants, regardless of what you, the person, want it to do. The brain does its own thing. So when it decides it wants to go into mania, it just starts overproducing and distributing these powerful natural chemicals like dopamine, endorphins, and others, and it takes you off on a ride where, I mean, I thought I could fly, I thought I was the smartest person in the world, thought I held the key to world peace, you know, saw the Holy Spirit come down numerous times, saw flocks of demons attacking our house. It was just absolutely wild. And then from that level of mania, I spiraled and crashed into hopeless, crippling depression and terrifying psychosis where I didn't want to live. I mean, and I had delusions and hallucinations of being spied on, watched, put in jail, beaten to death, murdered, you know, dying in a pool of my own blood. Visions of this powerful invisible force that would grab me around the chest and throw me under a speeding 18-wheeler, which would rip my arms and legs and head off and throw the bloody stumps to the side of the road. It was just, and those are called passive suicidal ideations, meaning I wanted to die, but I wanted somebody or something else to kill me. I didn't necessarily want to do it myself. But those are very dangerous condition to be in because it can turn into an active ideation where you develop a plan and you kill yourself. I called that bipolar hell. And I was in mania for the better part of 12 years, mania, way up there. And then I went into depression and psychosis for 2 whole years. And, you know, I called it bipolar hell. I was living in hell. Yeah. Inside my own brain.
I bet it was socially isolating as well, because at some point you probably didn't even want to leave the house. And I understand that you were asked to resign from the Army at one point?
Yes, to both of those. You know, when you're in a state of depression, you know, I lost all interest in everything, had no energy, rarely left the house, just looked into space, ruminated constantly, you know, would bang my head on the floor, punch myself, yell angrily at God. It was absolutely terrible. And, you know, back earlier when I did get, you know, when my symptoms were so bad, my boss, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest ranking military officer, he basically did an investigation. He didn't know, nobody knew I had bipolar disorder at that point because it was undiagnosed. They just knew there was something really wrong with me. And so for the good of my own health and for the good of the university that I was in charge of, he said, look, you know, you've done a great job. I give you an A+. I love you like a brother. But your time leading National Defense University is over. You have until 5 p.m. today to resign or I'll fire you. And I'm ordering you to get a psychiatric evaluation. And so, yeah, that was, I essentially got fired, but he was a really good person, very compassionate.
Well, he probably at that point did you a favor, you know, and I just want our listeners.
Saved his life.
Yeah. I just want our listeners to know we're speaking with Mr. Greg Martin. He's a retired Major General of the United States Army, and he's called in on our show to talk about the bipolar disorder that he's been diagnosed with and how he dealt with it. And he's here to talk about how to stop the stigma, promote recovery, and save lives through his articles and his talks and his interviews. And my friend Cindy Alex Foley is here as well. She is an author and the president of the Brevard Authors Society, and she's the one that included Mr. Greg with us. So, Mr. Greg, I understand we have 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you about your five, what are your, Greg Martin's five P's, is it?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
The five P's that you list in your book.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not like so green peas or pigeon peas.
Right, okay.
The Greg Martin capital P.
There you go.
Could be right. Urine.
So the road to recovery, the key elements are, number one, for a mental illness or bipolar disorder, number one is medication for brain chemistry balance. Number two is therapy. Number three is healthy living, you know, good diet, exercise, sleep, and so forth. And those are necessary, but they're not sufficient. To have a recovery that's built to last, you need to anchor them into the five P's. And the five P's are, first is purpose. You need a purpose in your life that drives you forward. Second is people, having a network of happy, energetic, fun people that lift your spirits. Third is place, living in a place that lets you fulfill your dreams and is safe and that you like. And then fourth is perseverance, the will to win, never quit, because recovery from mental illness is very, very tough. And then fifth is presence, the ability to objectively think about your own thinking. It's called metacognition. And it's important because oftentimes our own thoughts are our own worst enemy.
You know, what you make me think about, we always say on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on our show here that if you have faith, family, food, a few trusted friends, and a little finances, you're good to go. And basically, that's what you're saying. But at the same time, you know, there's so many things that we could be doing for each other in our nation. When you learn something that helps you, which what is what you're doing, Mr. Greg, like yoga, meditation, take a walk in the park, talk to someone, right? And a lot of people just wouldn't do it, or they don't share the information. But you are. But we've got 2 minutes left, and I just wanted, how do we stop the stigma associated with mental illness? Because you're coming forward, and thank God they ask you to leave because they saved your life. But how do we help other people to say, stop the stigma? If your mind needs help and your body and your spirit, we want to help you.
Yeah. Stigma is the biggest barrier to people getting help, medical help for their mental conditions. And stigma is based on fear and ignorance. It's a form of discrimination and prejudice against people who have a disease of the brain. There's no stigma against somebody with diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and neither should there be any stigma towards people with mental health condition. And the way you go about stopping it is, and I think I'm, and a lot of people are doing the same thing, is speaking about it, normalizing the conversation, sharing one's story, writing about it, articles, books. I wrote a book called Bipolar General, My Forever War with Mental Illness.
Yeah, and where can we find a book, sir, for a listening audience to purchase your book or know a little bit about you? Can you give us your website so people can go and check it out?
Yes, my website has got tons of information, articles, talks, interviews, you name it. And it's www.bipolargeneral.com. And when you go to the landing page, it's got a few Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the publisher that you can click and just go right on there and order the book.
Well, we thank you so much for taking the time to call in and share your story with us and use your experience to help other people. And Cindy, would you kindly give us the website for the Brevard Authors Society and where we can find your books as well? And thank you for getting such a wonderful guest for us, Mr. Retired Major General Greg Martin.
It was my pleasure. And Greg, thanks for calling in today. So with the Brevard Authors Society, our website is under construction, but it is constantly developing. We are www.brevardauthorssociety.com. I'm cindyafoley.com. You can purchase my books through Amazon. My pleasure to be here, Sita. Thank you so much for this opportunity today.
Thank you, and we want to thank Mr. Ronnie West for calling in and giving us great advice about good parenting. Thanks to Mr. Greg for calling in and speaking about his book about bipolar. And Cindy, thank you for believing in Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and supporting us. And to our listeners, we will be back next week from 1 to 2. We appreciate our sponsors. Thank you, Danny, and thank you, Allie, for co-hosting today in place of Ellen. We've had a great segment.
Yeah, we did. We did it. That's wonderful. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.